So, I'm going to first say I'm happy to be here. It's been a while, but 6 months. Generally, I think it's the last time I was here. And I can't remember what I spoke about last time, but I won't speak about it this time. I'm going to read this evening from a topic that I've been reading from many places. Somehow, it seems relevant to practitioners of devotional service. This is a book which specifically is meant for sadhakas. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has written essays on 6 activities which are unfavorable for devotional service and 6 activities which are favorable for devotional service from the teachings of Srila Rupa Goswami in his Upadeshamrita. And he has written an essay for each of those. And therefore, it is understood that those who are practitioners of devotional service, or sadhakas, means that they have established a particular goal in their mind. And everything in their life is all based upon achieving that particular goal. And of course, and Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur actually, in this particular topic that we're going to speak about tonight, is about patience. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains why it is necessary to be very patient in the course of striving to achieve the goal of devotional service, which he very clearly defines in this essay. In fact, I usually begin reading from this essay by quoting from the back, the end of the essay, and I'll explain why after I read it. We're specifically speaking about patience. And he says that those who engage in sadhana desire to attain the results. And he speaks about the karmis, jnanis, and the bhaktas. Karmis hope to attain heavenly happiness by fruitive activities. Jnanis hope to attain liberation by speculative knowledge. And devotees hope. Do you know what result devotees look for? Service to Krishna, yes, that's relevant, definitely. But he specifically says here that devotees also want a result. Generally, we always hear that devotees are not result-oriented. Devotees doesn't want any result of his activities. He wants simply to offer to Krishna, I just knocked this down, Ganga Bhupa. I don't know where it came from. But here he's specifically saying, for sadhaka, engaged in sadhana, the result he wants is Krishna's pleasure. So he says, jnanis hope to attain liberation, devotees hope to please Krishna by their devotion. Being impatient due to prolonged sadhana, some people fall from the path to the ultimate goal. Therefore, a practicing devotee who desires to achieve his goal attains that result only when he becomes patient. Quote, Krishna must be merciful to me either today or after 100 years, or in some other birth. I will take shelter of his lotus feet with determination and never leave. This type of dharya, patience, is most desirable for the practitioners of devotional service. So, as I said, the sadhaka is somebody who has established a particular goal, and the goal, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, is he wants to bring about Krishna's pleasure by his activities. And sometimes those who are engaged in sadhana, now, I'm not sure if this, how relevant this is to everyone who is here, but if it's not, if you're not engaged in sadhana, then still, you're here. So one type of sadhana is hearing. So it is relevant. So it's in fact, it's a very important part of sadhana, is hearing. So nonetheless, still, one who's engaged in sadhana is aspiring for to achieve some goal. And sometimes, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, people become restless. They begin to think that I'm not really achieving the desired result. Sometimes they maybe think I've been doing it 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 40 years, however it may be. And still I'm not getting the desired result. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says here that some people fall from the path of sadhana. They fall, they give it up because they can't perceive them actually getting the result that they hope to get, hope to achieve. Therefore, as we know that it's not something cheap to awaken Krishna's pleasure. It's something that in many places throughout the scripture, the evidence is given that it takes really pure heart, very great determination, and patience. And that's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur is speaking about it. In fact, I oftentimes quote the verse spoken from Prahlad Maharaj in the Srimad Bhagavatam 7th canto, where he specifically states that, my dear friends, you can't please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even if you become an expert Brahmin, or you become advanced in etiquette or vast learning, nor by austerities, nor by accepting vows, nor by chastity, or by great sacrifices. None of these things can awaken the pleasure of Krishna. It's not an easy person to please, some people think. And Prahlad Maharaj goes on to say, so none of these things can awaken Krishna's pleasure. The Supreme Lord is pleased only when one has unflinching, unalloyed devotional service to him. Without sincere devotional service, everything else is simply a show. So, that might sound like, boy, this knocks us all out of the park. We're not even in the game. Doesn't it? Is it discouraging? It shouldn't be. And that's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives some very, very nice, relevant discussions about why someone has to be patient. Because if you're looking for immediate results, it's not so easy to obtain, especially if we consider the evidence I just gave from Prahlad Maharaj. Of course, some would say Prahlad Maharaj is a 5-year-old boy, and somehow he achieved Krishna's pleasure in 5 years. So, well, that's to give us hope that it's possible. But he gives very clear evidence, and it's Shastric evidence, it's Srimad Bhagavatam, the emperor of all evidence, that awakening Krishna's pleasure is not a cheap thing. So, and as we know, that if Krishna is genuinely pleased by a devotee's service, then the byproduct result of Krishna's pleasure is bhajaniya parama sukha matra susukadvam. To the degree that Krishna is pleased, we become pleased. We become happy. We become satisfied. So satisfied that the only thing we want is the opportunity to serve. Because Krishna's pleasure is just, it's the pinnacle. Nothing's greater. It's nothing higher. The Takpumbir Dvija Sheshtavam Ashram Pabhaga says, Bhagavatam also states, that whatever occupation a person performs, it's ultimately meant for Svanushta Tasya Dharmasya Sang Siri Hari Toshanam, is to see that the Supreme Lord Hari is pleased. That's the goal. So, a sadhaka is somebody who's fixed that goal in his mind. And because he's fixed in that goal, whatever other activities he performs in the execution of his sadhana, or maybe whatever other activity he performs which is a support to his sadhana, such as his work, such as his family responsibilities, they're all simply performed in such a way that he never loses sight of the goal. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in many places, in Bhakti Loka especially, but many other of his teachings, he specifically, his audience, he's addressing the householders. Because he really, not only was he a householder throughout most of his life, but he spread Krishna consciousness, he spread the pure holy name and introduced it primarily to householders. So it's not that being a householder is a disqualification. And sometimes people think, well, you know, a sadhaka engages in sadhana. Well, somebody who lives in the temple doesn't have these other responsibilities, I mean, that's for them. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur, throughout many of his instructions, makes it clear that householders can also be engaged in sadhana as long as they have the goal fixed in their minds and don't become lost and don't lose sight of the goal, and as he warns, being impatient, because they're not patient. They, due to prolonged sadhana, they fall from the path and give it up. They give up their sadhana. So patience is a very, very important quality amongst all the other qualities Rupa Goswami gives in his Upadeshamrita. But I'm going to begin this topic and explain why it's important and how to practically apply it in a practical way in the execution of our daily lives in devotional service. And I'm going to begin by starting at the beginning now of this essay on patience and read a little bit and then try to explain and put it into perspective. This is the beginning, patience. For the practitioner of devotional service, dharya, patience, is extremely necessary. Those who possess the quality of dharya are called dhira, sober. Due to lack of this quality, men become restless. Those who are impatient cannot do any work. I need to clarify this, because the tendency is, as soon as we hear the word work, we think those who are impatient, they can't go to work. They can't punch in the clock at 9 and punch out at 5, or they can't hold on a job. But we made it clear right from the very beginning that we're talking about sadhakas, and sadhakas also have work that they're supposed to perform. One type of work is to maintain family, maintain body, and to perform these activities which are required for the maintenance of the body and family members. But sadhaka is also somebody who's working on himself. He has work. What is the work on himself that he's trying to do? Well, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is going to explain that very nicely, in a very profound way, that you may not expect to hear. Very profound. What does he mean? What does this work mean? Okay, so those who are patient cannot do any work. By the quality of Darya, a practitioner controls first himself and then the whole world. In the first verse of Sri Upadeshamrita, the symptoms of Darya are explained. Anyone know the first verse of Upadeshamrita? Hint. Vacho Vegam, Manasakota Vegam. Yes. Vacho Vegam, Manasakota Vegam, Jiva Vegam, Udarapasta Vegam, Etad Vegan Yo Vishiheta Dira, Savam Apimam Pritivim Sasishat. Okay. Now let's put this into perspective. In the first verse of Upadeshamrita, the symptoms of Daya are explained. So what is he talking about? A sober person who can tolerate the urge to speak, the mind's demands, the actions of anger, and the urges of the tongue, belly, and genitals, is qualified to make disciples all over the world. Now here's another verse that just kind of throws us all out of the park, okay? It's not me, somebody else. Why in the world would this be used as a criteria for somebody who can't control their mind, who can't control their words, who can't control their anger, tongue, belly, and genitals. And what to speak of somebody who can do that, he's qualified to make disciples all over the world. What's that got to do with me, we may be thinking. How is that? You know, I'm still trying to control myself. But there's a very, very important point that needs to be understood. And that's what will go on, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur will hopefully will make progress, because certainly not going to finish this topic tonight. I've already 20 minutes into the talk and I haven't even started it. But there's some very practical instructions that, because most time when we hear, well, control the tongue. So we think of control the tongue, what do we think? Eat Krishna prasadam and speak only about Krishna, right? That's generally the answer we get. To control the tongue, if you eat only prasadam, food offered to Krishna, and if you speak only about Krishna, the tongue will always be controlled. But how many of us can only speak about Krishna at all times? I remember a very common question people used to ask. They say, you know, how do I talk about Krishna at work? You know, if I talk about Krishna at work, I'll lose all my clients. If I talk about, how do I talk? You know, sometimes I have to deal with some very practical things. This appears to have no connection to Krishna. Should I just keep my mouth shut and not talk? But if I do that, I'll get in trouble. I mean, I'll lose my job or whatever it may be. Or sometimes we're even in a setting with other people who are inclined, or at least maybe not be inclined, but at least have demonstrated in the past that they would like to speak about Krishna and hear about Krishna. But how many times do we find ourselves in the association of people who are sadhakas, and all of a sudden speaking about something that's really what's borderline? Or sometimes it's even on the other side. And, you know, it's not so spontaneous to be able to apply the teachings of the acharyas in terms of, yes, always speak about Krishna and eat only Krishna prasadam. You know, and sometimes even eating only Krishna prasadam is also, it's not so very easy. You know, sometimes, you know, devotees find themselves, you know, in certain times, places, and circumstances. It's questionable. Is it prasadam? So, if this is the method of having complete control of the tongue, again, we're talking about something that's may discourage us over time. We may feel, I try to always speak about Krishna, I try to eat only prasadam, but look how many times I don't, and then we think, I can't give it up. I mean, I just can't control these urges. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives some very basic, practical ways for to do all of these things, and guidelines, things to remember, so that gradually one can actually come to this goal of having full control of the tongue by eating only Krishna prasadam and speaking only about Krishna. But what to do until one gets there? Do we just, does patient mean, okay, someday it will come, I'll wait. And we just go about doing everything like things we shouldn't do. We don't make any effort, we're just patient, yeah, I'll be patient. And if we're patient just like that and don't have an alternative way to actually make progress, gradually what happens is, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur is going to explain this, and I will also explain it, we're going to get swept away by these other things that will attract us because we haven't controlled our mind, we haven't controlled our tongue, we haven't controlled our the anger. These urges need somehow to be controlled in a practical way. And therefore Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying one has to be patient to control these six urges, Vacho Vega, Manasa, Kota Vega. And he says, therefore a person first tries to conquer himself. How does he play it? First he, by the quality, a practitioner controls first himself and then the whole world. Now, I'll explain. I use a very nice story in this connection. It takes a little time to tell it, but it really gets the point across. Hopefully it'll help you to understand what does it mean to first control yourself and then control the world. It's a story I very much like to tell about one of our great acharyas. His name is Raghunath Das Goswami. Anyone who knows anything about Raghunath Das Goswami, he was, besides being Prayojana Acharya, a person who's actually the Acharya who establishes the goal for all devotees, his austerities were described in Chaitanya Charitamrita to be comparable to like the lines in a stone. He was uncompromising in controlling his mind, his tongue. Receive certain instructions from Lord Chaitanya in this connection, and he followed them and applied them perfectly. But Raghunath Das Goswami, as a child, he was raised in a very wealthy family. His father was a very wealthy landholder. His name was Govardhan Majumdar. And he used to collect taxes from all the citizens in his tract of land. And both he and his brother, Hiranya, were both landholders. And Govardhan Majumdar would collect a monthly income of approximately 2 million gold coins. Now it is said that during this time, one gold coin was sufficient for a family to have land and to live off for their whole life. One gold coin. He had 2 million. He would give away 1 million, he would give to the Nawab, and he would keep 1 million for himself. Point is, he's a wealthy man. And Raghunath Das was his only son. So you can imagine how Raghunath Das was pampered. Govardhan, he had a huge palace. And he, Raghunath, lived in this palace. And it's described that in this palace, at every entrance of the palace, there was always a palanquin waiting for Raghunath. And whenever he would leave, no matter which entrance he would leave from, there would be a palanquin waiting to carry him. Govardhan arranged his life in such a way that he never saw any ugliness. He didn't see any old age, disease, deformities. He was really, really protected. In fact, it's even described that the pathways wherever Raghunath Das would have to walk when he wasn't in the palanquin, they were all lined with petals from lotus flowers. So his feet would never touch the ground. This is Raghunath Das Goswami, his child. And this is how he lived. As we know later, he desired to give it up. And here's another important point. So Govardhan had two priests. One was named Balaramacharya, another was named Yadunandanacharya. And Balaramacharya was a disciple of Haridas Thakur. Haridas Thakur, as we know, he was also another acharya who had full control of his mind, senses, tongue, body, genitals. He was a sadhaka of the topmost order, who would chant a fixed number of mantras, names a day, 300,000 names a day. Practically speaking, he would sit and chant for 20, 22 hours a day. And he had also full control of his mind. It could not be allured in any way by wealth, by bodily beauty. So Haridas Thakur was visiting Balaramacharya once, and Balaramacharya had actually built a small thatched hut for him to stay in so he could chant his fixed number of rounds every day. And he was right nearby, in the village nearby. And because Govardhan Majumdar was a very pious man, devoted in many ways and very charitable, extremely charitable. Many devotees, as we know, Jagannath Mishra, they all receive charity from Govardhan. So he was always trying to get blessings from saintly persons. So one time, while Haridas Thakur was nearby at Balaramacharya's, Govardhan said to Balaramacharya, "Please take my son, Raghunath, to Haridas Thakur. And please ask him to give my son a benediction." And Govardhan prepared a very, very opulent, a cartload of precious silks and metals and as an offering of charity to Haridas, thinking that when he sees this, certainly he'll want to give my son a very wonderful benediction, blessing. So he prepared the cart and he sent guards with Raghunath and sent servants all along with him to accompany him, along with Balaramacharya, to the place where Haridas Thakur was performing his bhajan. When he arrived at that place, Balaramacharya introduced the gifts that Govardhan was offering to him and introduced Govardhan's son, Raghunath, and says, "Raghunath is the son of Govardhan Majumdar. He has brought, on behalf of his father, all of these wonderful gifts." Now, Haridas Thakur wasn't impressed. didn't stimulate him in any way. He wasn't able to be manipulated to give a particular type of benediction based upon the presentation of these gifts. He looked at them and said, "Yes, very nice." That was it. And he said, "Please give a benediction to Govardhan's son." Now, Balaram Acharya knew that Haridas Thakur wasn't going to be swayed by the gifts, nor was he going to be in any way compromised. And therefore, when he asked this question, he knew that Haridas Thakur was going to say something that probably Govardhan wouldn't want to hear. So when he asked the question, he then sneezed very loudly so that nobody could hear the benediction except him. So Haridas Thakur gave Govardhan the benediction. Raghunath the benediction. I give you the benediction that you'll be detached from this whole world. That was his benediction. Now, of course, he had good reason to say that, because look how Raghunath Das was being raised. Now Haridas is giving him a blessing. You'll be detached from the whole world. So they returned to Govardhan, Raghunath Das's father. And then Govardhan began to inquire from all the servants and the guards, did Haridas Thakur give my son a benediction? And they all said, he said something, but none of us heard it. And then he went to Balaram Acharya and said, so did he give a benediction or not to Raghunath? And Balaram Acharya said, yes, he gave a benediction. He said, he gave your son the benediction that he will control the whole world. When Govardhan heard this, he was in ecstasy. Control the whole world? I have control over this whole tract of land. Look how many people I control. And my son has now got the benediction from this saintly person to control the whole world. So someone may say, why did Balaram Acharya say such a thing to Govardhan? And the point is, the deep meaning of this is that he got the benediction to be detached from this whole world. So that means nothing in this world can control him. Nothing. Not wealth, not beauty, not any of the other allurements for a person who's got his mind and tongue, belly, genitals, urges of the to speak, all under control. He's controlled himself. He can't be controlled by anything in this world. Although this world is filled with many allurements which can control us if we're not controlled. And that's the problem. If we can't control our minds, if we can't control these urges, then how easily we can be controlled by anything that puts forward a proposition that's attractive to our mind, our tongue, genitals. We're controlled. Although we may think we're independent, we're controlled. But Raghunath Das got the benediction that he'll be completely detached from this world. So therefore, Balaram Acharya said, your son got the benediction that he will control the whole world. Why? Because nothing in this world will control him. Nothing. Therefore, in the same way, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is explaining here that the practitioner of devotional service, the sadhaka, he has to be patient. If he actually wants to achieve this platform of controlling the world. In fact, usually what happens is people who can't control their minds, can't control their tongues, they try to control everybody else artificially by some other way. So they try to control, but unfortunately, these things, they try to control by offering wealth, I'll give you money, I'll try to control them by bribing, try to control by physical strength, control them into submission. So many ways they may try to control. And look what Hiranyakashipu did. in his attempts to control with his power. He wanted to control the whole universe by his power, his strength, by his dint of his austerities. But ultimately, Lord Nrsimhadev showed him who was in control. So, the point is that the sadhaka has to actually learn how to control himself in a practical way. And therefore, in order to do so, he at least has to know some guidelines of what needs to be controlled, and he needs to be patient. Now, I've spoken a lot in the course of my visits on this topic, because there's six things. There's the urge, the six urges: the urge to speak, urge of the mind, the urge anger, and the tongue, the belly, and the genitals. So I've spoken a lot about the urge to speak, and somehow I haven't been able to get past it, because there's a lot of very, very relevant instructions, practical instructions about how to control the urge to speak. I probably won't get past it tonight either, but maybe we'll be able to go beyond it in the future classes. And I want to first address this topic about a practical way of controlling the urge to speak. And Bhaktivinoda Thakura goes on to explain. There are six types of urges, namely the urges of the speech, mind, anger, belly, tongue, and genitals. With a desire to speak more, a person becomes talkative. Somehow when I read this, I'm trying to figure out if it's a translation or something. Obviously, if a divine person desires to speak more, it becomes talkative. But anyways, if speech is not regulated, then enmity arises from talking about others. So, this is usually the point which is a lot can be said, because it's very obvious that if we cannot control the urge to speak, then if the natural propensity of every living being is to speak about somebody else, because that's our nature, that's why we have tongues to speak. But it just so happens that somebody else is supposed to be Krishna. And if we examine the activities of the residents of the spiritual world, and who have completely saturated their hearts and their minds and words constantly, and it's like there's a verse in the Bhagavatam which describes the Paramahansas who have accepted Krishna within the core of their heart. They are attracted to speaking about topics of Krishna as if they're completely ever fresh and new. For them, they are attracted to such topics in the same way as materialistic persons are attracted to speaking about women and sex. So Shukadeva Goswami uses this as an example to say that Paramahansas, they spontaneously speak about Krishna. And there's so many verses which provide evidence about such persons. Madashriya Kata Mishta Srimanti Katiyati Cha, engaged constantly in hearing about me and speaking about me. Sadhus don't suffer from material miseries, because they're always filled with thoughts of my activities and pastimes. And as we said, even the residents of the spiritual world, when Uddhava visits Vrindavan and comes as a messenger on behalf of Krishna, when he comes to Nanda Maharaj, and Nanda Maharaj is very eager to hear from him about his son, he's feeling great separation from. And as soon as Uddhava comes and begins speaking, immediately Nanda Maharaj begins talking about Krishna. Where's my son? Does he remember his parents? Doesn't he know that we're burning in the fire of separation from him? Look what he's doing to his parents. Why doesn't he at least come and see us? He starts. It says, we try to forget about him, But it's impossible to forget about him. Sometimes we even leave the house and wandering about Vrindavan, trying to forget about him. But wherever we look in Vrindavan, everything we see, we immediately see him. And it reminds us of him. And the Govans just speaking about Krishna. And when Uddhava went to the gopis immediately began speaking about Krishna. Where is that boy who came and spent time with us, and we know he sent you to see his family members because he has persons who have relationship with their family members, they behave in one way, but those who are not family members, we see that they have only interest long enough to get what they want, and then they lose their interest in them, just like a bee comes to a flower and then rejects the flower. They begin talking about Krishna. These are just examples, which is, the point is that it's the nature to speak about somebody else. And the residents of the spiritual world, their minds are, and words are always, when Mother Jasoda, she's churning the butter, she begins speaking about Krishna. She begins glorifying his activities and pastimes. She begins making up poems and songs about Krishna's activities, and everybody's hearing her as she's churning the butter, speaking about Krishna. So, because it's natural to speak about somebody, when people get together, that natural propensity to speak about somebody somehow gets perverted. If we don't want to speak about Krishna and we have a natural propensity to speak about somebody, we'll speak about somebody else. And then what do we say? Well, Bhaktivinoda Thakur also gives some very practical instructions. He says, talking without reason about other people is extremely adverse to devotional service. Many people talk about others to establish their own reputation. Being envious, some people are accustomed to discuss others' character. The minds of those who are busy in such topics can never be fixed on the lotus feet of Krishna. So, as we said before, a sadhaka is somebody who's trying to fix his mind on the lotus feet of Krishna. And if he can't control the urge to speak, then as soon as he gets into association with others and begins speaking about others, starts speaking about other people, if he's not careful, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says he'll create enmity by speaking about others. Why? Because sometimes while trying to establish one's own reputation, it's very advantageous to say bad things about others. Because the more bad things you say about others, the better you look. It's just natural. If I can say this about that person, especially when we're in close circles. When we're in close circles, then everybody knows who's in the circle. If you can eradicate all the people in the closed circle by saying something about them, it's really good for your own reputation, because then all of a sudden you're perceived as in a superior position than everybody else that you said something about. And then we have to ask, was it? Therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, without reason, is it necessary to say these things? Is it necessary? Is there a reason for it? And we have to ask ourselves before saying, what is the reason for it? Because he goes on later and says, he says, very important point. He says, those who talk about others while influenced by devotional impediments like envy, hatred, pride, or distinction, the offender is at the feet of Bhakti Devi. So, again, we have to look within our own hearts to see, well, am I free from envy, pride, distinction? Why am I saying this? Is there a reason? Do I have to say it? And if there is no reason, then what happens is then enmity is created. Why? Or enmity, and friends and enemies, basically, is what's created. We create enmity because we say something about somebody that we really didn't have to say. And of course, usually the first thing we always say to somebody when we say about something else, the first thing we say to them is, don't tell anybody. Right? And that's sort of like that's the cue. I'm going to tell you something that's confidential. Could you keep it confidential? Sure. Don't tell anybody. Okay. Did you know that? No. And then immediately we think, well, I know somebody else is confidential. I can tell them. And everybody always has somebody confidential they tell. And before you know it, you don't even know who knows or who doesn't know. And then eventually it gets back to the person. He says, why didn't you say that? You didn't even speak to me first. Is there a reason? What was the reason? Why didn't you at least come and ask me first? So this is very practical. And the many, many, many more practical things that we can learn about how to control the urge of the tongue. Because unless we can control the urge of the tongue, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur very clearly says, he says, the minds of those who are busy in such topics can never be fixed on the lotus feet of Krishna. And unless we can control the urge of the tongue, then what kind of a sadhaka are we? We're doing things which are completely against the goal which we're supposed to be striving to achieve. We'll never be able to think of Krishna, but at the same time, we're engaged in activities which is making it impossible to think about Krishna. And there are times when we can speak about others. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur actually explains. He gives. I tell you, it's brilliant. It's brilliant. Explains when it's okay and when it's sinless to speak about others. And what are the circumstances for which... I don't have time to go through all the list of things. But the point is that before one speaks about others, first and foremost, one has to make sure those who talk about others, while influenced by devotional impediments like envy, hatred, pride, or distinction, or offenders at the feet of Bhakti Devi, first one has to look within their own heart and to make sure that they're freed from these things before they start speaking in a disparaging way about others. Now, of course, there's a way to counteract that. Lord Chaitanya himself even gave instructions that what happens when somebody realizes that I did speak about somebody in a disparaging way. Did speak about someone in a disparaging way, but now I realize I shouldn't have done it. What should I do? So there's a story in Chaitanya Bhagavat about the Brahmin who came before Lord Chaitanya and who previously couldn't recognize Lord Chaitanya's glories, his greatness, and he spoke in a disparaging way about Vaishnavas. He saw Lord Chaitanya, he thought he was a sentimentalist, and he began to referring to everybody who was in the streets chanting with him were also sentimentalists, and he thought that they were just completely disturbances to society. And he said some things about them. And then later, when Lord Chaitanya actually began establishing his Sankirtan mission and thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of people were coming and surrendering to his lotus feet and taking up the congregational chanting of the holy name of the Lord, he realized that I said something before that I shouldn't have said. So he went to Lord Chaitanya in Kulia, and when Lord Chaitanya was present there, and fell at his feet and said, please, I beg you. I said, previously I could not recognize the greatness of Vaishnavas, and I, with this tongue, I said things that I shouldn't have said. How do I rectify myself? And Lord Chaitanya instructed, he said, just like if a person willingly drinks poison, he can counteract the effects of poison by drinking the nectar of immortality. So in the same way, with the same tongue that you use to speak this way about others, use that tongue to speak about the good qualities. Glorify the good qualities that you see, because everybody should be able to, if they're actually broad-minded, be able to see that there are good qualities. In asadaka, somebody who's Prabhupada used to give the example like of a sadhaka is a person who's washing his hands, and if somebody comes over and says to him, your hands are filthy, but I'm washing them. So if the sadhaka is actually endeavoring, if he's actually endeavoring, of course this is also an important quality, but he's actually endeavoring to advance, make progress in devotional service, then we should be able to see good qualities. And with the same tongue, glorify these qualities. In this way, it's okay to speak about others. If we actually speak about others in a way that's recognizing what the good qualities in them. But if we're going to speak about others and point out certain defects in their character or qualities or in their behavior, there is a certain criteria that one has to follow to do so. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives different examples from scripture. He says, for instance, sometimes when the spiritual master has to instruct his disciples, he may have to, in order to conclude his argument, he has to point to a certain behavior or an example, maybe not particularly of a person, but of a class of people in general, to make his point clear, because otherwise it may not be clear. He says, I'm running out of time, but I'll just use this so that I don't leave you hanging about opportunities to speak about others. Otherwise, it's cold turkey, right? It's not very practical. So he gives different examples. He says, when previous Mahajans have talked about others in this way, there is merit in such talk, not fault. As Shukadeva Goswami said in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and then he quotes the verse, second canto, first chapter, third and fourth verse, the lifetime of such an envious householder is passed at night either in sleeping or in sex indulgence, and in the daytime either in making money or maintaining family members. Persons devoid of atma-tattva do not inquire into the problems of life, being too attached to the fallible soldiers like the body, children, and wife. Although sufficiently experienced, they still do not see their inevitable destruction. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that although Shukadeva Goswami talks about materialists in order to instruct his disciples, he's not considered a prajalpi. Such activities are considered beneficial. And then he gives another example of Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya spoke to his disciples specifically about a person, although he didn't name him. And he quotes Lord Chaitanya, he says, in order to instruct his own disciples, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spoke about pseudo-renunciants in the following words. He says, Lord Chaitanya says, I cannot tolerate seeing the face of a person who has accepted the renounced order of life, but who still talks intimately with a woman. There are many persons with little in their possession who accept the renounced order of life like monkeys. They go here and there engaging in sense gratification and speaking intimately with women. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, my mind is not under my control. It does not like to see anyone in the renounced order who talks intimately with women. So he's talking about somebody, but he's making it clear. He's making a point, establishing. Yes, he's concluding a point. Yes, sometimes it's necessary to say something so that the point is unmistakably clear. And then he goes on to say, and here's where everybody's going to jump on it, but we'll qualify. Unless one speaks in this way while instructing and while concluding a subject, there is no benefit for oneself or others. Therefore, when the previous acharyas have personally set example and taught others, how will we be benefited by acting contrary to their instruction? And if one discusses in this way the improper behavior current in a religious sect, or amongst the general public, then such talk is not adverse to devotional service. So sometimes it is necessary to speak about improper behavior. But he qualifies that by concluding his subject by saying, if one's going to talk about others, first they have to be freed from devotional impediments like envy, hatred, pride, or distinction. Otherwise they're offenders at the feet of a bhakti deva. So what does one do if one sees something? Therefore, and has to point it out. Well, first, if one's heart is not free from envy, hatred, pride, or distinction, then one should try to find somebody whose heart is at least, maybe not free, but closer. And approach them. And with a straw between one's teeth, one can present it. My mind is not under my control. I see certain things that it's difficult for me to understand. Therefore, but I'm not free from envy. I know I'm not free from envy, hatred, pride, and distinction. But you have a better chance of being able to understand what I see than I do. And you can tell me if I'm wrong or if I should just not say anything further and then speak. But not in such a way that creates enmity. And that's Bhaktivinoda Thakur's whole point. That those who cannot control the urge to speak, who speak simply to establish their own reputation, simply out of envy, and can't control it. They can't control it. They can't ask themselves first, do I need to say this? Is it necessary? Is there a reason? If they can't control it, then why say it? Then they should understand that I have to control this urge to speak within myself. And then gradually try to become controlled myself. And then by becoming controlled myself, what happens is when one becomes self-controlled, they can control the world. Because others will see, this person is controlled. How do I become like that? This person's peaceful. That is a symptom of a controlled mind, controlled tongue, controlled anger. He's peaceful. He's happy in any condition of life. This is powerful evidence. This is very powerful evidence to convince somebody else. This actually to be an example. And therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, if you control yourself first, then you can control the world. Because the whole world will come to you and say, how do I control myself like you? And therefore he uses this as an example. We really have to be patient until we actually get to this platform of being able to control all of these urges, but not just blindly patient. But we should have some guidelines on how to live as sadhakas, how to live in the association of devotees, how to pass our life in such a way that we're at least making the effort to control this urge. And this is only the urge to speak. There's still the mind, anger, and other things that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in the course of this essay, will give very practical instructions for the benefit of all of us who are endeavoring to make progress in spiritual life. So this is a little tip of the topic of patience. And if we become patient in the way that Bhaktivinoda Thakur prescribes, patience, he says that a devotee should be convinced that I will get Krishna's mercy, whether it's now, 100 years from now, or some other birth, someday, I will go on serving Krishna and I will remain patient. And it's a very important point. I'll end with this simple pastime. That when a devotee is fixed on his goal and is determined to remain patient, the Lord acts in such a way that he can become pleased very easily. And although we said, although under ordinary circumstances, it's very difficult to awaken his pleasure. But if we're really patient, and the example, of course, is Mukundada. He was extremely patient. Mukundada, he was, when Lord Chaitanya was during in his Mahaprakash Lila, he was giving out benedictions to all the devotees. One by one, he was calling them before him. And he was satisfying each and every devotee with their desires, with the innermost core of their heart, one by one. When he was manifesting his divinity while standing on the altar during the Mahaprakash Lila. And yet he did not call Mukunda. And all the devotees began to wonder that Mukunda is such a close associate of the Lord. Why has the Lord not called him yet? And they asked, Mukunda is standing right nearby. He's waiting. You've called all your intimate associates, but you haven't called him yet. Will you call him also? And Lord Chaitanya said, no, that rascal. I will not call him. He said, previously he used to associate with impersonalists. And in their association, he behaved just like them. And when he comes into our association, he behaves just like a bhakta. This is just like a person in one hand. He holds a club, a mace in one hand, and a lotus flower in another. So one hand he holds a lotus flower, and the other hand he beats me with the mace. I will not give him my mercy. And Mukunda was hearing all this as he was standing by the side. And he was totally distressed. And he asked Srivas, he said, ask him, when will I see him? When will you allow me to see him again? And Lord Chaitanya said, and Srivas asked, Lord, Mukunda wants to know, when will you see him again? He said, 10 million births and he will see me again. Well, you may think that's a cause for discouragement, great disappointment. 10 million births, imagine, count them. Imagine a different species of life. You know, some may feel like this is a cause for suicide. But what would Mukunda do? Mukunda began dancing in ecstasy. Because all he heard were the words, I will see. He will see me again. And he began calling out, I will see, I will see. He had so much faith in the Lord's words that he will see him again, that he didn't care 10 million births. All he knew was that he will see again. And he was so happy. Patience, like anything. Ready for 10 million births. And then what happened? Lord Chaitanya said to Srivas, call Mukunda. Call him. So they called Mukunda. He couldn't hear. I will see, Mukunda! He wouldn't come. Lord Chaitanya had instructed him, go bring him here. They had to go pick him up and put him right in front of him. The Lord reduced 10 million births to a few moments. Why? Because firm faith. One is firm faith in the words of the Lord and the determination to go on. That firm faith, that unrelenting firm faith to go on in devotional service, even at having to take 10 million births, can all be reduced to a moment by the mercy of the Lord. Therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he doesn't go into it 10 million births. He just specifically states, you know, that, what does he say? I just want to quote the exact quote. He says, Krishna must be merciful to me either today or after 100 years or in some other birth. I will take shelter of his lotus feet with determination and never leave. This type of dahya, patience, is most desirable for the practitioners of devotional service. Okay. I think I'm going to end here. And it's supposed to be, or is Artika.